Wisconsin falls to Indiana, and now the question gets real. Are the Badgers drifting towards the bubble? March is getting closer, the margin is getting thinner, and every game suddenly feels bigger. Then we open the Bucky stock market, buy, sell, or hold on certain players heading into the spring. I'm Rajiv, he's Justin. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers, ring one up.
And discussion from the fan perspective.
Woohoo!
Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Bucky Report. We are your hosts, Rajiv and Justin, back together on another Monday evening, this time because of Super Bowl, to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers. On today's show, we'll start with Wisconsin basketball after a tough loss to Indiana and ask the question that's getting louder: how close are the Badgers to the bubble, and how much concern should there really be right now? We'll break down what this loss means and where things stand as March approaches. Then we'll shift to Wisconsin football and open the Bucky Report stock market player edition. Three buys, three holds, and three sells. Who are the upgrades? Who still has something to prove? And where could Wisconsin actually be slipping heading into the spring? You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit the subscribe button. Thanks so much for all the continued support of the show. Justin, how you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. Saturday was a train wreck for me because the Badgers blew it and Wrexham got their teeth kicked in. So I'm waiting for something positive to happen from a sports standpoint. Super Bowl was meh.
Positive for me, man. I hate the Patriots.
I definitely wanted Seattle to win.
Yeah, we'll start there. Super Bowl, obviously, big thing in sports. I was very pleased with the results. I think the football was total shit. Like, I mean, God, like the first half, 9-0, no one could score a touchdown. I thought Drake May looked fairly pedestrian and bad at times, and that's not a surprise. They played a very weak schedule. They had a cupcake walk to the Super Bowl, and they got beat by a far superior team. I said it last week that there's one team is superior, and it's the Seahawks. Like, it was very clear who the best team was. So I was very pleased with that result. It is sad though. Like, football is just over now for a long time. Like, that sucks.
I mean, not really. We're like less than a month out now from spring football starting.
We are more than a month out.
Some programs are starting.
Yeah. Our program looks to be starting on like the 18th-ish of March. So something like that.
I know Nebraska starts in like a week or something like that for their spring stuff, which we're always late for. I know what reason we're late for, because our weather sucks here and we don't have a great indoor practice facility. So at least yet. That will change, and then they'll have more flexibility. But yeah, I think we're all looking forward to the spring news. We're hoping to hear some good things. I don't want to hear any more strength conditioning stuff. I would like to hear some speed stuff. I know we won't, because it's basically like off season, you know, free agency right now. Teams looking at like, oh, who's dumb enough to put stuff out there so we can figure out who's taking, you know, big leaps for these teams.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We will get into football. Justin has a cool segment we're going to do. We're going to talk three players that we are confident in are upgrades. We're going to buy those, like upgrades to the team. Three that we think might be, but we're not sure. Those are going to be our holds. And then three sells that are basically, we think they're downgrades from where we were before. So we're going to get into that when we talk football. But first, we're talking to Wisconsin basketball. I mean, man, I don't think that I've ever been so upset at referees after a game of basketball than I was after the IU game. That was really depressing. But nonetheless, I'm just going to set the stage here before we start talking about this. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin is now 43rd in the net rankings. Okay, so that's still tournament worthy. It's right on the bubble, though. That's kind of where we are. We need to really want to be in those 30s, because remember, 64 teams in there, but not all those are at large bid. So we have to really work ourselves up in the net. So we had five games in a row against quad one opponents. One is gone. We lost, which we're going to get into that loss. Then we got four more games in a row, home against Illinois, or at Illinois, home against Michigan State, at Ohio State, home against Iowa. That Iowa game still counts because they're a top 20 net team. Indiana was 33rd. So all these teams ranked above us, we're going to need to get them. We're 1-5 against quad one right now. There's a lot of disappointing things to talk about that game, which we're going to get into. But I mean, like, let's just start there. Let's just get into the game. I was on Locked On, the reaction show, disaster, of course. We're up four. When Nolan Winter hit that three, we're up four with 50 seconds. I'm like, oh, we got this. But no, we just couldn't. We couldn't do it. We couldn't get that done. We fought hard. But of course, our slow starts, once again, just get in the way of our success, which is really frustrating. And I've been more frustrated about it since the game. Tell me where your head's at with everything about that Indiana game. I haven't talked to you at all since that Indiana game.
So I for one, felt like that Boyd did have an offensive foul. I don't know what exactly he was thinking in that moment, but you can't extend the arm.
There was someone in his way. That's not a
arm went like this, like he was pushing off. Like that's going to get called every time, at least by a referee that's a decent ref. Now, having seen some of the footage on the Blackwell stuff, I can start to see where people are saying that's a foul, because I do think that he tried to trip. Based off of what
you think, he tried to trip him
when he lip pulled his foot up and tried to catch the back of his leg. Yes, I think that he was. Blackwell has now. Don't get me wrong. I think it's something crafty players do to try and get that call, but it's kind of one of those low key dirty things that guys do, like the jersey clutching and stuff like that. That happens to try and get guys off balance or whatever, and make it look. In the moment, I definitely thought that it was a terrible call. Having seen that with the foot thing where he was the reason that the guy effectively tripped, I feel indifferent to it. Like it could have gone either way. I can't really be upset with the call, but I also would have been like, I can understand why you don't call it in that moment.
Okay.
The guy was out of control a little bit.
Here's why I disagree with you, because I do not think that the referee saw him step on his foot. I'm not saying he didn't step on his foot.
I will agree with that.
Okay, but then it shouldn't have been called, because what the referee was calling, in my opinion, we don't know what's in his head, but it looked like when Blackwell went for the steal, which should he have just walled up? Probably. That was just a good defensive play. He sees the guy trip over and he instantly thinks, well, clearly that's Blackwell just being too physical. He did not see the foot. No one saw the foot until someone put it on Twitter an hour later, and it's like blown up. And I'm like, come on, dude, that's not real time. You watch
that's fair. Time. That's totally
there's
fair.
There's no chance the referee saw that, which means it shouldn't have been called. That's crazy. You can't make a call. And here's the thing. There's zero consistency in that game. Because a few plays before, Blackwell barely touches some guy on the arm, gets a foul. And then our guys, Nick Boyd, yes, he got blocked and he shouldn't have been doing the stuff that he was doing driving the lane. But number four just kept, he hit him on the arm one time. He bodied him up. We were getting no consistency in the calls. So I am very bitter about that. I do understand the foot, but there is no chance the referee saw that.
So here's, I guess, how you can look at that. Should it have been called based off of the evidence that they had? No. In hindsight, looking at what happened, was it actually probably a foul?
But that's not really how the game works.
I know that. Everything. But my point is that you can look at it and say the calls probably shouldn't have been made, but was the call technically wrong? Like now in hindsight.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, you can look at any basketball game and say, well, that was fair in hindsight. It's a last second call. Like that dude needs to be under control. He should have passed the ball. He was heavily blanketed by Blackwell. The right play should have been to give the ball to someone else, because Blackwell was playing great defense. And on the Boyd thing, yes, I understand that there was an extension of the arm, but man, like the guy's feet was not set. It was absolutely a blocking foul. The Indiana player was in Boyd's space of attack. Boyd was running. He invaded the space. That's a blocking foul, whether he extends his arm or not. That's a blocking foul.
I don't disagree with that, and that's how I would have called it. But my point was, is the reason it was called is because he extended, and that looks like you're pushing off as an offensive player trying to create space. I actually think that that's a rule that is that it should be called far more than what it is. It's one of the things that makes me hate the game more than I did 20 years ago, because offensive players constantly initiate the contact and they constantly get bailed out for being overly physical with the defender. Like not to go too far into this, but this is where I was talking to you and Ryan in our chat, and I was looking at the refereeing between Jordan and what they do with LeBron now. And I was like, it's night and day. Like, Jordan didn't get away with anything offensively compared to the stuff they do in today's NBA. Guys will throw a shoulder or whatever offensively now, and they get away with that stuff. And it used to be like, if you extended at all, it was automatically offensive foul. Like, you just were not allowed to push off with the arm at all offensively. So I have an issue with the way that the game is officiated on the offensive end. I think they've gone way too far over trying to make the game, the scoring go up. And it pisses me off because I feel like defenders are kind of in the land of, we're damned if we do, we're damned if we don't. Because they're going to bail out this guy who's out of control and being playing like crap. And he's going to get to the free throw line when he doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, I think Will Hanna says it well here. He says that Colin Boyd, when both players are in space and moving up the court, rarely, if ever, gets called on the offensive player. And Indiana was trying to foul. Yes, that player was
that part of it too. I do agree with that. I'm kind of shocked that they weren't anticipating the foul in that moment, because that happens more often than not, where a guy will get a foul called on him when he's maybe not even trying to foul quite yet because the refs jumped the gun. And instead this went the other way.
I mean, I just think in general, like, it was, and also here's another thing, last thing I'll say about the officials. There was that traveling call that all five Badger players were giving the travel signal. I actually don't think that was a travel, because I do not think that number four had possession of the ball until his feet were off the ground. And if his feet are on the ground and he gets possession, and he falls over, that's a travel. If he doesn't actually get possession until he's up off the floor, that's not a travel. I don't think it was a travel. And I know that's going to upset a lot of people, because I know a lot of people thought it was, but I don't think it was. And I think that I understand why the Badger players got all upset, you know, but play until the whistle, please. Either way, let's go back to the beginning here and realize, like, yes, we're in this game, and yes, we can be pissed off about the officials, but dude, again, with the slow starts,
yeah,
what the hell is going on with this team? Why can we not start playing until there's 10 minutes left in the first half?
And that's what I told you going into this one, is this is the type of stuff they can't get away with when they're playing on the road against better teams. And that it's exactly what happened. You can't get down 14 points early in the game and then be fighting to get back in the game the whole time. And this team has a bad habit of doing that. Now, at home, you can get the crowd behind you when you start making your comeback, and it probably gives you enough energy to finish that. Against these situations, I absolutely felt like the crowd, like, Indiana benefited heavily from their crowd in this game. Like, I thought that brought them energy consistently throughout this game. I do think Wisconsin feeds off the heel aspect of things a little bit. Like, I think they have a little bit of that vibe to them, where they want to kind of take, like, rip the hearts of the crowd out in games like this. But yeah, they've got to be better offensively. I don't think they touch the post enough in these games early. Not that we do throughout the game to begin with, but I think you need to find ways to do that, because we have too long of stretches, especially early in games, where we just settle for threes. And it's like, you got to get in the lane here, because that's where you're building off of.
Yeah. A good friend of the show, Kevin Brown, says, why is Greggard failing to change things up when the team gets out to a slow start? So I want to ask you, Justin, and everyone in the chat, what would you change? Like, I have thoughts on this too, and I'm going to give my thoughts, and I talked about it on the Locked On, but like, what are the things that you feel like need to be done differently at the beginning of the games? I'll go first on this one, because I asked the question. For me, it's you said it, touch the post more. I appreciate the fact that we got good threes at the beginning of that game. Like, Biliauskas was wide open. He couldn't drain them. Okay. They weren't bad shots. The problem is, those are still, of all the shots on the court, the lowest percentage shots you can take, as far as just when you're wide open, the further back you go, the lower percentages. That's just simple math. My thinking is, like, force the ball inside. And even if it's Blackwell posting up, Winter posting up, maybe you get fouled. You can slow things down that way. Maybe you start bloody Braden Carrington for once, and you actually put him out there to get things moving when we're having these slow starts. It is mind-boggling to me that a team that is a tournament tile team, that is a couple games behind the first place in the Big Ten, is consistently going down 10 to 15 points early in games. And I am frustrated by that. And I do put that on Greggard, because You need to pound the ball inside more. There's no, we, how many times have you started a broadcast like, oh, this is one of the tallest teams in America, Wisconsin, so tall. Yeah. Well, play like it then. Actually put the ball in the post and make someone make a move. And you know what? Maybe it doesn't work. Maybe Nolan Winter misses that shot because he gets blocked. But I don't think that's any lower percentage than a Billy Oscus wide open three. Okay. I would rather have a contested block shot, like a, on the block from Nolan Winter, than a wide open three early in games. I know if we make those, it's a different story. But the thing is, we're not making them early. We're making them in the second half when Blackwell decides to start playing and we're doing things differently. But I mean, what in the world is happening? So tell me what you feel like needs to change right now.
Yeah, I think I we're getting to the point where I honestly think that Carrington's probably one of your five best players. I am not against the idea of him starting. I would probably put him in instead of Rhodey out there and bring Rhodey in off the bench because I just don't think he's productive enough right now. And I think Carrington's giving you a ton of hustle. I think he's rebounding well. I think he's defending pretty darn well. And I think he's been scoring more. I also think, like I said, I think it benefits you, especially on the road, to get easy shots early or get inside and get in a rhythm attacking a little bit before you start settling for longer shots.
Yes.
Get to the free throw line, see the ball get in the hoop a little bit, and then work your way back.
It's also not that challenging. Why are they doing that? What the hell? I mean, that's we talk about this all the time. Like, I mean, I know that I don't want to just go in on guard too much, but I'm a little frustrated because after 2, 3, 4 games, you'd think he'd change it. Kevin Brown says, start BC with JB. BC and Winter going into the post, run a damn pick and roll and throw the ball to the man rolling. Yeah, I said that during the Ohio State game. I was losing my mind at the Kohl Center being like, can we please roll the man who's setting the screen, especially with Nick Boyd. When Nick Boyd, they are doing everything they possibly can to stop that man from going left. Then screen him so he goes to the left. That they are going to switch. They will switch. They want to stop him going left. Then roll to the basket. You got an open layup. I'm not saying it's that easy, but they don't even try it.
Yeah. Oh, crazy. No argument for me. I think that that's a big thing that we don't do enough of. They randomly will slip a screen. They rarely roll. I mean, you've got opportunities here where there's some things you can get away with, especially with how aggressively they're playing Boyd at this point. Because let's be honest, he's the player they're most afraid of on the court. And I think at this point, because of that, you need to play into that a little bit. You need to keep them more honest. You know he can't go right, so there's got to be somebody that punishes them to that right side if they overplay to the left.
That's right.
Got to be the role man. So you've got to use that opportunity.
It drives me crazy because, like, we're not. I mean, and I've talked to Ryan about this too. And Ryan coached basketball, and he understands the game way better than you and I do. And he totally agrees with this too. I just don't see why they're not making those adjustments. And I know that it's much easier to just, like, as a fan, just say that, make the change. I get that. I understand that. And so for those of you that think that, I hear you. But I also just feel like there needs to be some adjustments to the fact that we are getting destroyed at the start of these games, and then we have to spend 90% of them getting back. And to our credit, and I'm going to go into this now, we got to give them the credit for fighting. I know some people are like, oh, I don't know, like the slow starts are a bigger deal. But man, like this team does fight back and we're not rolling over for anybody. And I think there is something to that. And you look at the play of Nolan Winter. I mean, that dude's a double-double machine. Again, a fantastic game. How do you feel about the fight? Are you too annoyed by the bad starts, or are you happy with the way that they're fighting?
I'm glad we're playing better than we were earlier in the year where we were rolling over effectively and playing dead. Like they've gotten better defensively. They're still not good defensively, and they're never going to be this season. But there's more fight in them defensively than what we've seen in the past. They fight through their slumps, but I do think that they play into their slumps a lot more than they should early in these games. And that's a big part of the problem is you keep jacking up shots. And I get the concept of the shooters got to shoot and shoot their way out of it, but you have an opportunity to find yourself hunt some easier shots, which is how you get yourself out of it. Like it's almost like in baseball, seeing a guy bunt or just draw a walk, or whatever, to get his batting eye back. It's kind of the same thing in basketball where you're doing this, where you're like, maybe you just need to see one go in. Mm-hmm. You know, they talk about it all the time saying that put yourself in a situation where you get an opportunity. Blackwell has a nice ability to go into the mid-range and do some things, and it's one of the things that kind of stinks because he's the only guy in the team that really has that. There's nobody else on this team that shoots the ball from other than a layup or a three-pointer. Like, those are literally all they have in their arsenal.
I mean, it's
such an underutilized part of the offensive game at this point.
Totally agree. I do think that Carrington has that in his game, but Carrington, which is a little frustrating to me. Listen,
he's not a volume shooter, though.
I love Braden Carrington, but one of the things that I've been a little frustrated with him on is that he sees himself as the three-point specialist now, which I understand why. But what he's doing is he's fighting tooth and nail to get an inch of space to shoot a three. And when you get an inch of space, you're off balance, your feet aren't set. That's not a good shot. So instead, he can like hunt better shots. He also has the ability to put the ball on the deck. He can drive in a little bit. He can, like, I love the drive and pop, like hit just the stop and pop. Like, that's an effective shot. It's very high percentage, as Blackwell has done time and time again. And it's frustrating to me that he doesn't do that. I'm not trying to blame Carrington. He's fighting out there, but I would like to see a little bit more from him from a shooting prowess perspective, because I think he has it in his game. He can do more than that, you know?
Yeah. One of the other things that really drives me nuts with this team, and it was a staple of the Bo Ryan teams that we just don't seem to have anymore, is the shot fake. I never see guys use it as an offensive weapon anymore on this team.
Winter's trying.
Yeah, but like, I don't expect him to be jacking up 8 threes a game from the outside. Like, Boyd and Blackwell, that needs to be an aspect of your offensive game because of the fact that, well, number one, Blackwell is not great at creating space. Like, he's not a guy who can get a step very often. He's got to do whatever he can to be able to create those opportunities to drive the hoop.
You're right.
Boyd has a little bit more in his game, but it will just help his speed play up even more if he does it. And it drives me nuts that these guys never use that, because that was something that Bo was like, this needs to be a part of your arsenal. Like, you've got to draw a team. If you're going to be a team that wants to shoot from the outside, you've got to be able to use this, because we don't have a bunch of guys who are capable of getting in the paint and driving consistently. And I don't know why we got away from that, but it was a massive part. If you remember the 14 and 15 teams, like, every guy in the freaking court would shot fake like constantly in those games. And that was a major part of why we had so many open threes.
It's one of the things that we all know, that Bo Ryan was so good at the little details, right? Like creating space through shot fakes, his post play, the different moves he taught. Like, yeah, I mean, he was on a different level, and it's upsetting. Defensively, I mean, what can we really say? Like, I think there were times where it was okay, but I mean, Indiana's big man, he dominated down low. There was the points in the paint were an absolute anomaly in the first half. I don't know what the hell we're doing. It's just, look, I think this team is good. Okay. I really do. But I think that we're like, the margins are obviously small. And I do think there are things that guard needs to change and this team can do to drastically improve their chances of making the tournament, getting a decent seed, winning some of these next few games. But there, something's got to click and change a little bit more start of these games. Like, obviously, you look at the Penn State game, that's fine. We just blew them out of the water. But that's not happening most times. And we've got an insane schedule. Illinois can blow the doors off that place. We could lose by 40 points against Illinois. I'm telling you, that is absolutely.
I don't think it'll be that much, but yeah, I think a blowout is definitely a possibility. Like, we could drop by 15 to 20, no problem.
For sure. Like, and if we not shot, I mean, obviously, look what happened in Nebraska. That this team is arguably the best team in the conference right now, and they're going to be insane. Michigan State, you know how well coached that team is. They're coming to the Kohl Center. Do you feel like we need to win one of these next two games? Or, I mean, I think most Badger fans think we're going to lose them both. And honestly, we probably should lose them both.
No, I don't see us winning either one, in all honesty. I just don't think we're consistent enough. And I think that these teams are more skilled, to be just blunt about it. I was just going to ask you the question I had on my head is, what would you say our seed range is for this team?
I mean, right now I feel like we can be as low as out or like an 11, which is like the play-in. I think we might be able to, if we win.
What's our ceiling?
One of
these. Your opinion, based off of what we've seen from this team so far, what do you think that their ceiling is?
Their ceiling is probably a 6 seed.
See, I think it's 7.
I mean, it could be, but it's all about the, listen, it's all about the quad ones. Like if we can nab a Michigan State win and beat Iowa at home, which is a quad one, and this, we could get higher, but it's all about the quad ones at this way. The seeding, that's why we were so high last year, because we had a lot of quad one wins. And
I don't see that happening this year. I mean, it's just not going to happen unless they, like, they would have to, if they get the wins that they're, that they'd have to get in order to be in that position, they legitimately would almost be winning out, and they would be like a five seed because they'd have so
many wins. Last week, you said this team was going to go 4-3 in the month of February.
It's still possible. This is one of the games that they had to win, and they should have won.
They really should have. And listen, Indiana's 33rd in the net rankings. Now, part of that's because they beat us, but I think they might have been ranked higher than us in the net. Maybe not. I'm not sure.
But they
took a big leap there because they beat us. And like that would have been a nice game to say, okay, we got that checked off. Now we can play these other two. It's going to be very difficult to get these other two, though, obviously. And then it's Ohio State on the road. Also another quad one because it's a road. They're outside of the top 30, but the road.
I feel
and
good then about that game still.
I mean, if we can beat Iowa, beat Ohio State, the two at the end of the month, or Oregon and Washington, let's say we lose the next two games. It still puts us at six losses in conference going into the last two games of the season if we can win out. But it's, again, I think then you're looking at eight-ish seed. But if you win one of these games, if you go and upset Illinois, and now you've got a win against Michigan and Illinois, that's insane.
Let's say Michigan State. Like, that seems like the more likely.
Hey, nobody thought we'd beat Michigan. That's all I'm going to say. I mean, Alexis Bilioskis could have another banner day. If we shoot
60% from the field again, sure. We've got a chance to beat any one of these teams. How many times have we done that this season?
Do you think Carrington starts the next game?
Probably not, but I think he should. I don't know, like, I also look at this and say, was any of this, and I don't think it really matters anymore, but like, were there guarantees made to guys in the portal? You know, like, was Rhodey told your starter, and Carrington was brought in kind of as just like happy to be a guy who was brought in as a depth piece, that you're going to risk the potential chemistry on the team by altering some of this? I would say probably not. In my initial thoughts, otherwise we'd probably have more issues with Rapp right now, because Bielskis is obviously a freshman and Rapp was brought in as a guy who was projected to start, and they had no qualms with pulling him when he started to play poorly. But Rhodey's a little different, being a guy who's a senior.
And I'm hoping that I never thought I'd say this, but we need Rapp back. Like, we need him. We need him back.
Yeah.
Let's hope that whatever illness he's dealing with, whatever that's
really going. Struggled to score in that game.
Yeah. Ryan says I'd say start BC at the four against certain matchups. I agree with that. I think that, like, but
I don't know if you want to do it against Illinois, but yeah.
Illinois's got a lot of length. Illinois's got a ton of length. I agree with this for what Ryan's saying. I think that starting him, it does make sense. But I don't think Greg Gard's gonna do it, because as we know, Greg Gard is Mr. Stubborn. I mean, as evidenced by the fact that how many times has Ryan called for his own defenses and all that stuff? Like, he just doesn't change stuff. We played like
10 seconds of it this season.
And I think that he's just going to be too afraid to start BC at the four and have Nolan Winter as the only guy with any length. And then we're just inviting posts in the points in the paint, and we're inviting to go down early.
And let's be honest, Illinois can be far more physical than us. So they're not only going to have more size, but they're also going to be more physical, and they're more skilled. In all honesty. So I think it's a game that Wisconsin has to basically shoot the lights out in order to get a win in this one, because Illinois is legitimately the better team. And I'm not saying we can't win this game, but I'm saying we have a lot of things to overcome in order to be able to do that. And that's kind of the same thing with Michigan State. Like, Michigan State's more athletic than us. They have a lot of length. They're going to rebound and play physical too. They're not as skilled as Illinois is, but they're probably as athletic, if not more so, than what Illinois is. So there's a couple of teams here that are just bad matchups for us, because I do think that some of the teams that we've beaten in the Big Ten are more athletic and less skilled, and it showed. Like, Ohio State, I put in that category. I think they're more athletic than us, but I think we have a fairly comfortable skill advantage in that game, and that's why they struggled against us at times. and Wisconsin was just capable of kind of putting themselves in better situations than Ohio State was. But yeah, I think that that's a big part of the problem that we're looking at right now.
Illinois, I've always said, is like is one of the toughest places to play in the country. Purdue and Illinois, I've consistently said, the two hardest places to play in the Big Ten. Illinois is a very rough place to play, and that team is damn good. And I'm telling you, like, if you told me right now, win the game or lose by 40, I'm choosing lose by 40. That's what I think is more likely to happen. Like, that team is going to blow the doors off us. I really do believe that. Unless we are miraculously shooting 65% from three, which could happen, we're not going to get close. Michigan State, as you said, you're rightfully said, that's the better game. Still think we lose that. It's the games after that I think we really have to win. Let me tell you something. Let's say we lose the next two games. That Ohio State and Iowa game, back-to-back, those become really huge for our tournament resume.
They do.
Because they're both quad ones, and they're winnable quad ones. And if we don't get them, now you're looking at four games left in the Big Ten season, and now all of a sudden you're like, are we going to make the tournament? Like, it is razor thin now. I'm not saying you have to win the next two. You get it when you got to win the ones after that. If you take one of the next two, it drastically increases our seeding, our chances of making the tournament, and our margin for error. I just don't see that happening.
It also puts you in a really tight spot for the Big Ten tournament. Like, if you start to falter here and drop down in those rankings, suddenly you get a win in that tournament, which might just be a garbage win. Like, you could end up playing Maryland or somebody. Well, I don't know. Does everybody get in the tournament, or is it the top 18?
I feel like this year that everybody is in, but honestly, I don't know. I feel like they change format.
But yeah, it's going to be a bad team that we probably would end up facing off, whether we get in the second round or the first round. It'll probably be second round.
Second round.
But you're going to have a game under your belt where you're going to go against a team that you probably would have been able to set up for a better game, hopefully. Like, you might have a chance at two wins. You might only get one now, because you're not going to get that team that's already played one. So you're going to be the team that's played one, and you're going to be playing a better team.
Yeah. Nick Hitchens, good friend of the show. Guard will start Janicki before BC, unfortunately. Do you feel like that's true? I think it might actually be true. I think Nick's kind of right.
I think if it is, it's based off of health. I don't think it's played off anything. I think Janicki is playing more than Carrington, because Carrington's had the hip issue. And I do think they're trying to extend.
Like, I don't since know. I think he just trusts Janicki more defensively.
He shouldn't. I think Carrington's the better defender.
I think Carrington's better all around. I think
I would agree with that.
Most people listening to this right now, and who will listen to this in the next couple of days, agree that Janicki needs to have less minutes. I think we've all said that. But again, guard's going to do what guard's going to do.
He's a little bit like junior Carter Gilmore, where it was really a struggle when he was out there. Like, you're playing 4-on-5 a lot.
Does that mean that next year he's going to be
incredible? I hope so. It would be amazing if he would suddenly take a massive step, or he would just calm down and be less spastic on the court and hopefully have more positives happen from an offensive standpoint. Because, man, it's tough.
The Carter Gilmore arc. If Janicki has that, I'll take it. I'll take next year.
It's crazy that he went from being a guy who was expected to at least be a pretty good shooter, because that's what he was in high school, to just being awful. It's a little bit like their coach. Oh man, why can't I think of his name? The big man who came in as like this crazy scorer, was like a borderline 5-star. It's from South Dakota.
You talking about our coach, like one of our, yes. Our like Steamsma?
Yeah, not Steamsma. I don't know why I'm blanking on him. It doesn't matter.
Krabanoff? I don't know.
Krabanoff, yes. Krabanoff was a huge scorer in high school, and he got here, and it's like he couldn't score anymore. I think his best season, he averaged like 8 points a game.
Yeah, he was good, like, man.
How did this guy go from being like an incredible scorer to being like nothing when he gets to Wisconsin? Like, that's a little bit how Janicki is to me, to an extent, where it's like his number one selling point coming here was that he was a shooter in high school. And it's just completely gone out the window the second he got here. And it's like, how do you get this? How do you regress this much?
Make sure you tune in to Locked On Badgers tomorrow after the react for the reaction show after the Illinois. Hopefully, maybe, eke out a victory. Anything else on basketball before we move on to football, Justin, that you want to touch on?
I think we're good here. I mean, I think we're all frustrated. We want to see them figure out a way to win a couple of games that they're not expected to, but these are really tough matchups coming up. And this is not a, like, this Badger team is getting tougher, but it kind of lacks the toughness for these two games. I think Michigan took us a little lightly, which is why they got stung in that game. And we shot the freaking lights out in that game. Now they played their butts off, but they're going to have to play similar to what they did against Michigan in order to win both these games. And that includes the, we're going to have to shoot the lights out. We're going to probably have to shoot close to 50% in order to win either one of these games. And I think we're going to struggle to be able to find ourselves good shots.
Yeah. You know, I think we're going to lose by 30. Honestly, I really do. I think we might be Michigan State, but not tomorrow. Okay. So let's move on to football. Spring football practice is going to be beginning close to around the 20th of March. So at least that's what we're hearing. So it should be about a little over a month away. But we're going to do a little analysis of, this is Justin's idea, buy, sell, hold. But here's how this is going to work. So the buys are going to be three players who you are confident in. And correct me if I'm wrong here, Justin. Three players that you're confident in are upgrades from last year. Okay. The holds are going to be three players you think are upgrades from at their position from last year. So basically transfer portal guys, right? And the sells are people that you kind of think are maybe a bit of a downgrade based on what we know. Doesn't mean they're going to be downgrades, but from what we know right now, projecting from these players, that's what we're going to do. So buy, sell, hold, three players each. We have not shared these with each other, so this is going to be interesting. I know we're going to have disagreements because we definitely disagree on a certain position, which we talked about in Madison, which we're going to talk about today. But let's start with the buys. So the three players who you feel like are going to be upgrades at their position.
We'll swap back and forth. So we'll each name one.
Yep.
So I'll go first. To me, number one, Marvin Burks. I feel very confident that he's going to be an upgrade at the safety position over anyone that we had at that spot last year.
Yeah.
I just think that the floor is exceedingly high with him, and I think that he offers the chance to be a very, very solid to good safety for us next year.
I feel like we might have the same list on these. Definitely Marvin Burks is on there for me as well. Like you said it, high floor. And after Zachman's injury last year and our inability to have good safety play, Matt Young did get better throughout the season. It was a rough go. Marvin Burks instantly raises that floor. And in a defense that was already pretty good. And so that's a nice piece and adds to that secondary. For me, I'm going to save the obvious one for later. I'm going to go Austin Kwecki. That to me is an upgrade for center position. We talked about Renfro. If Kwecki can stay healthy, which has, you know, come on, our center positions don't like to do that. That's going to be critical. I think he's an upgrade. Center right there.
Yeah.
Center and safety so far.
He's one of mine too. I agree completely. I trust him more. Like, we never really got to see center be even solid to good last year. I think he can be average to above average starting center for us next year, which is absolutely huge for this team, given how inconsistent the offensive line play was. And I think that's a massive start to the season to have somebody that you feel like you can rely on to provide some consistency there.
The offensive line still scares me. It really does scare me because totally I don't think there's a lot of depth and I'm worried about the guys we brought in. I don't know how they're going to be, but I think Kwecki is the guy you're like, okay, he's going to take that Renfro role. I feel
very confident that he's going to be adequate.
Right. I think you have question marks with the guards. You're not sure about depth behind Haywood and who's going to start it right. Tackles at Simmons. Like we don't know. Is it Mandel? Like there's just there. Listen, we're going to learn a lot in the spring and we're going to talk a lot about the O-line this spring because last spring it was a big topic of discussion and it became our biggest Achilles heel in the season. It's going to be something that we talk a lot about. I'm assuming your last one, we're going to have the same one here.
Maybe not.
Okay, go ahead.
Javon Robinson.
Okay.
I feel very confident. He's the stabilizer in that corner room. I think he's going to be the guy that I look at and say, I trust him to be like, I think he's got better physical tools than Hallman ever had. Like he's legitimately got top end speed at corner with a similar build. And I think that he has opportunity to make up mistakes that Hallman really didn't have. So I think that he gives you a baseline in that room that this team badly needs based off of what we saw last year. And I don't think we felt overly confident in any of the guys there. I think they looked far better at the end of the season, mostly because the pass rush got so much better.
So for me, my third buy is Colton Joseph, who I thought was going to be one of yours, but that's fine if he's not. For me, like, yeah, I mean, listen, I think Colton Joseph is an upgrade because we didn't have a quarterback last year for all, pretty much all the year. I think he's an upgrade on what Billy Edwards was coming in as. The skill set Billy brought to this team, even though he only played a third of a game, but like
my perspective on him is that, and you could put a folding chair in the quarterback position going into next year, and it's effectively an upgrade over what we had last year.
Fair, but I'm actually looking at it from the Big Ten perspective, like from the Billy Edwards perspective. I actually feel like he brings more than Billy brought even before Billy was hurt. I think the moxie this guy plays with, it's a little bit more than Billy, and also like the dude's running ability is insane. We are going to get an upgrade at that position, but I hear you on Robinson, and we'll go to the holds now. And my first hold is Javon Robinson. Okay. So I'm with you on Robinson being one of those guys. The reason I say hold, I think he's going to be an upgrade is you could have said the same thing for me about Colton Joseph. I struggle when you get these skill guys like the cornerbacks that come to the Big Ten. The Big Ten is a different animal. Like he played at Arizona State. I mean, he played against
he played on a playoff team.
He did. I just feel like I'm confident. If I had to get, if we were doing four buys, I would have picked Robinson. I moved him down to the hold line because we had three, but also because I just don't know. I haven't watched enough film on him from last year to see how he performed against top guys. He's going to be our top corner. He's going to face the top talent in the Big Ten. We don't have the greatest schedule, but Notre Dame's got receivers that are going to test him, as does Penn State, as does Iowa. Like he's going to be tested a lot. And I do feel like I'm a little bit like if you tell me, is the corner room better than it was last year? Yes. But I'm a little bit skeptical on this whole defense still. I'm just a little bit tense on it because I just don't know how much better it's really going to be. Marvin Burks, though, to me, was an automatic upgrade. Javon Robinson should be, but I'm going to put him in the hold category. What's your first hold?
I think that's where when you brought up Colton Joseph, that's where I'm at. I'm so skittish now on the offense that I'm afraid to like have high hopes for him because I feel like if I buy in, then suddenly he's going to go out there and throw like four picks in the first two games, and I'll be like, nothing can go right. Like it's just it is what we're never going to be good offensively again. I would say my first one for a hold is going to be Kevin Haywood. I actually legitimately think that I was not impressed with what we got from the left side of the line. I don't think they were bad, but I also don't think that. If we get the same level of play on the left side of the line with Haywood there versus what we got out of that group last year, I'm going to view it as this wasn't a great season. Cause I think we will see more dominant reps out of him than what we saw all of last season on a left tackle.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't factor in existing players into mine. I looked at more transfers.
I'm talking to everybody.
That's fair. I just focus more on the transfers, but I would disagree with you only because like, I understand the argument. Like we don't know. We still don't really know what we're getting out of Kevin Haywood. It's a lot of speculation and the skills that he has, but I mean, I don't think in my opinion, there's no world where Kevin Haywood is on an upgrade at left tackle than what we had last year with Heinzen. And then Mama did a decent job there, but he's more of a right tackle anyway. Yeah. I think Kevin Haywood does have that NFL pedigree that I think just comes out next year. That's my take on it. All right. Who's your next hold?
My next hold is actually Colton Joseph. I have a hard time not seeing quarterback be better even than what we would have expected from Billy, because you know, I wasn't high on Billy coming in. But I do think that there was a significant drop off between Billy and the next quarterback that came in and Danny O'Neill. And I do think that we see Joseph just able to do some things that allow us to find some consistent basic offensive parts or offensive plays and just repetition that we couldn't this last couple seasons. And I think that makes a huge difference in terms of us being able to continue drives. I think it makes a huge difference in us being able to find some things that we can lean on in moments that we haven't had the ability to do in a while. And I think that he's just going to help the running game a lot. Like the fear of him being able to get around the edge is going to keep the defensive ends honest and not able to just crash down on the run game.
So for me, my next hold, this again, these are players that we think are going to be an upgrade at their position. I'm going to go Shamar Rigby. I like Shamar Rigby, and I think I feel like I'm a little higher on him than you are and that Ryan is, but I think he brings experience from Oklahoma State. I like his size. I think he's a guy that just like, you know, he looks like he's going to project well. And when you look at the receivers that we had on our team last year and the production level, obviously the quarterback was horrific. So the whole situation was a downfall. And that's why you see guys like, you know, Tretch leaving and other guys leaving. So, but I think there is an upgrade in Rigby. I feel like there's always a question mark, like who really is our top guy next year? Who are our top wide receivers? Is it Hilton? Is it Rigby? Like, who is it? I think Rigby is an upgrade. I'm not saying over a particular player. Like, Vinny Anthony was great. Okay. He was. I'm not saying he's an upgrade over Vinny Anthony per se, but I do think that the production that he's going to bring is, in my opinion, going to be an upgrade. I'm a hold, though. I'm not like confident in it, though.
Yeah. I think, and that's kind of the perspective I've taken with the wide receivers going into this next year. They're going to have better numbers than the guys we had this last year, simply because I just think you're going to have a more cohesive actual set of players out there. Like everything was so messed up last year that Vinny Anthony didn't get a chance to show how good he was. Ballard didn't get the ball thrown to him when he was, you know, wide open on multiple plays. That's something that I think we're just going to be flat out better at this next year. And that's going to make the receivers look better. Like what do you need to do to be the best receiver this year? It's got to be like what, 400 yards, something like that. It's a super low number for you to be the most productive player. And I don't see a problem with that happening at all. Like somebody's going to have 600-700 yards. I have no idea who, but I do think somebody's going to take off to that point and become kind of the guy that Joseph starts to look at as his go-to guy.
It is interesting. Like every year we've done this multiple years in a row. We're like, oh yeah, there's going to have a 750 guy. They're going to 2,500 passing yards. Like we expect it every year. And then every year we've get our hopes dashed because of injury. And that's not, you know, it's out of a lot of control, but it is something.
2,500 yards really hasn't, like, that's something as a program for the most part, we've been able to get around that range. It's been a recent development where we've had stupid, like even under Longo, we had a year where we had like 2,800 yards.
It's just that like our numbers are always inflated going into the year because we expect to not have the injury, which, you know, we can never predict that, but it's just, you know, okay. Who's your last hold?
My last one is Poyser. Ryan and I are going to argue on this one all season. Like he's not as high on him as I am. This feels a little bit like Hill a couple of years ago where Ryan's like, I don't think he's going to be much anything. And he turned into a solid player. I think Poyser is going to be a good player for us. I think he's going to be a guy who gives us a little bit of that quickness and ability to be disruptive in the inside. And I think he's going to be good for us.
So I'm putting Poyser in the next line down.
How dare you?
Listen,
so both of you I'm fighting with.
I mean, we this is what I knew we were going to have this discussion. Like, I know that people are excited about the, listen, it's fine. He's a
he
good
was an all Met guy. Okay. It's not
what
like
I'm saying is like, I'm very concerned about the defensive line. Very concerned. And I just don't see how, like, I know you're very confident that this defensive line is going to be as productive as it was last year, which I just don't understand because Ben Barton had a fantastic year and we're going to need a step from a guy like Johnson. Perkins is going to have to do his thing. Poyser is going to have to show up. Like, we got really good production. We held teams in check late in the year. We even scared Indiana for a short bit. You know, Illinois, Washington, none of those guys could run the ball on us. And that matters. And the reason that we were so good is because our defensive tackles were incredible. They played really well. That defensive line got it done. We lost a lot of production there on the edge, everything. I hope Poizer is good, but I'm when I look at Ben Barton and you're telling me that Ben Barton is being replaced by Poizer, that to me, I feel like that's a step back. And I'm not, this is nothing against Poizer, but I am very concerned about the defensive line. And I know that you're not, and I don't know why.
So what I will say is you guys had the same reservations heading into last season.
Oh, we know.
None of these guys, you didn't think Barton was, none of us thought Barton was going to be any good.
That's true.
We didn't think he was even going to start.
But we did. I definitely said that the defensive line was going to be a massive upgrade last year because we added so much size, right?
How could it not be a massive upgrade? It was horrific the year before.
Okay. But you're asking now, I'm saying to me, I don't think the defensive line is going to be as good as it was last year. I just don't.
And it could not be as good as last year and still not be a train wreck. Like, I think you guys feel like the varying degrees are, it goes from being a good defensive line to just being back to where we were before, which was largely driven by the fact that we had no size. They still have size, and I think that they feel pretty good about the athletes that are in that room.
Like, I hear you on that. Like, I understand your point about it. I'm not saying it's going to be a train wreck again. I don't think it's going to be a train wreck because you're right about size. But this, we're looking at whether this is going to be a downgrade or an upgrade. I am when I look at his position as a whole, and the reason I
look
at Poizer
him as a Barton exchange, though, I look at him as being Suggs. Like, okay, that's the guy who I see him replacing. I think he offers a little bit more in terms of power than what Suggs had.
So, do we have a Barton on this team then? Are we going
to
have?
I think it's going to have to be Anderson, or it's going to have to be somebody that's already in that room. Maybe Perkins. I don't know. We're gonna find out. We're gonna find out in the spring. It sounds like Perkins was injured a lot of last year, which is why he didn't actually end up having the role they were hoping for. So we'll see what happens, but it's gonna come down to somebody's gonna have to step up.
I think you're a little too high on the D line. But that's
I'm not
okay.
that high. I'm not that high though. I think the defensive line is going to be solid heading into this next year. I don't think we're going to have teams running it down our throat. I think they're going to be good enough to be able to make teams have to play us honest.
So if I said to you the defensive front, not necessarily the linebacker, the defensive front right now, edges, defensive tackles, better or worse than last year?
I think it's going to be worse than last year, but I don't think it's going to be a like drop off a cliff. I think there's some spots that are going to be better. I think Cheeks will be better heading in this year. I think he actually legitimately takes a step. I think Clayton will obviously be worse than Reiger because Reiger, in all of our opinion, is a pro and Clayton is young. And I think even though he's got better physical tools than Reiger has, I don't think we're going to be able to see him totally unlock that this year.
Zach Bartz agrees with you. He says, I'm with Justin. I'm also high on Poizer, a 300 pounder with violent hands and 5.5 sacks as a DL. Sign me up every time. Yeah, look, I'm happy that we got some replacements there, but it is absolutely low key one of my biggest concerns about this team right now because we took it for granted, in my opinion. Last year, the production was incredible from that defensive line. We were far superior. Yes, the bar was low, but we were stopping teams from running the ball. And I feel like in this conference, you have to have good defensive tackles. And if you don't, you are in trouble.
I think they had opportunity to go after more guys if they wanted to. And the fact that we didn't chase after more guys tells you all you need to know about it.
Okay.
I think Whitlow clearly feels good about his room. I trust him.
Fair enough. So moving on to the next line down, which is our cell. So one of mine, of course, was Poizer. That's just, you know, I'm also going to, again, I don't dislike this guy, but when I look at who he's replacing, I'm going to have to say John Kamara, only because I think Christian Allegro is a massive loss for this team. And he is, in essence, that replacement because he's going to be the next inside linebacker after the big two now sophomores.
Well, I guess what are we doing with Heiberger? Because that's where I feel like Kamara kind of falls into. Well, I mean, guess it really depends on defensive alignment. They're probably both going to play, and they may be used in different ways. But it's so hard for me to look at this and really understand what they envision for everybody. I know they talked about Posa was probably going to be the rover, and you were going to play, you know, Allegro as a traditional inside linebacker, which is fine. But who do you let be the rover now? Is it Posa, or do you let John Kamara? Like,
I think it'll be post.
They're both freak athletes. Like, either one of those guys can be let loose and just let him go downhill. I would think instinctually we'd all agree that Mason is the one that we view as being the having the best instincts at that position.
Yeah.
He agreed. Just always seems to be in the right spot.
And I know, and I'm not saying like, I think Kamara could be a great player. I looked at it strictly from a Allegro replacement. Yeah. And to me, he's not Christian Allegro. I'm very high on Allegro. I think he's going to have a good year at Ohio State. He's going to be good there. But to me, that's a, I'm a little worried about it. What's your first, what's your next one?
Yeah. To me, it's honestly Nick Clayton or the question mark at that other spot where I look at it and I say, I'm sorry, but whoever fills in the spot is not going to be as good as Mason Rieger was. Like, the impact that he had on our defense was such a huge impact that I think that Clayton could have a really nice year and it still won't be as good as Rieger.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my third one was pass rush. So I agree. Like, any pass rush, it is a concern, but again, it brings back my whole defensive front problem that I'm worried about. But yeah, I mean, Mason Rieger, and as you've talked about, played very well in the Shrine Bowl. He's going to get drafted. He's going to be a third, maybe third round draft pick. He's going to be fantastic. Replacing him is going to be very, very, very difficult. I do think a guy like Justice Boone could do a job. I think, like, I could see him, you know, being a guy that's out there. I think we do need to see growth from Nick Clayton. Obviously, I think Posa as a pass rushing inside linebacker can be devastating. He can play a little outside situation. I think in the aggregate,
we can make up some of that pass rush.
For sure. And I think, like, Jaden Lofton is another guy. I lost his name. I found it there. That's another guy that I just think that, like, you have some issues. That entire defensive front, including the pass rush, other than the inside linebackers, that's where I'm confident. But otherwise, because the defensive backfield, I think we're all pretty confident that that's a better group than it was last year. Clearly, it's safety. But when you have this front, everything relies on that, because when we didn't have the 300 pounders, look how bad our defense looked because they got swallowed up every time. Our linebackers couldn't do anything. If we have a bad defensive front, Mason Posa and Cooper Catalano could be in trouble where they can't do the things they need to do because the guys in front of them aren't doing it. Yes, the size is there, but it's concerning to me. But yeah, I'm with you on pass rush. I think that's definitely a problem.
My next one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Would be Tyler Janzy. Probably. I think I'm a little concerned about fullback. It'll be interesting to see what we actually do with this. Do we actually drop a tight end back there? Is this something where you put someone like Steck back there potentially in the backfield to be a guy come as a lead blocker in certain circumstances? I don't think we have to have a traditional fullback. There, it may be, you know, you go H-back and have somebody that you feel a little bit better about, but I don't think that you feel as good about it as what we were coming into, where I was super high last year on what we had set up there. And I don't necessarily feel that way heading into this season.
You like Jackson Aker a lot.
I did. I'm concerned. Like, Janzy's, that's a fresh position for him. I don't know what we're going to see from him heading into this season. Like, maybe he's competent as a blocker. Can he do anything else? Like, I don't think he's a bad athlete by any means, but Aker was a running back his whole time here, whether it was fullback or actual running back. And some of those instincts, he had 4 years worth of work on it, and you have a guy that's coming back in here that's, you know, maybe you hope he can turn into like an Austin Ramish or something like that, but he's not there. He's probably not there to start the season. You maybe hope he grows into that role well as the season goes on.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you see these position changes like this, like this coaching staff sees something. And I don't think they're going to make that move unless they're pretty confident that he's going to, like, because they could have gone out and got somebody who can block that blocking type fullback if they wanted it. There's a lot of those guys out there they could have easily got. That's just a good, solid blocking, you know, fullback, H-back kind of guy. But if they feel like Janzy can do the job, I feel confident in that. I think that, like, he clearly has shown the ability. And you're right, it's going to be mainly a blocking. He's not going to be a receiving threat, I don't think. But as a blocker, for a guy like Abu Sama, who, all, by the way, Abu Sama almost made it into my upgrade category because I really like that guy. But yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm okay with that move. It doesn't bother me too much.
Yeah, he's certainly a grown man, Sama.
Oh yeah.
That dude is a brick shit house. Like, he's way bigger than anyone we've had. Well, I guess Atuka's probably close in terms of size, but Atuka's body was not reshaped like Sama is. That he looks like he's ready to take 300 carries if he had to, or 250 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that that's huge to have somebody that they feel like they can consistently get the ball to and not have a problem. He looks like he'll hold up.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that tight end is probably my last one, and I don't have a specific person, but I really feel like we undervalued what Mason actually was for us. I felt like he could have had he was second team all conference. If we had a competent quarterback all season, who knows what his stats would have been. Like, he could have had 500-600 yards receiving at tight end.
I think I'm pretty high on Steck. I feel like I'm happy with him, you know.
I like him, but yeah, I feel like he's I don't know if he's ready to have that type of impact.
We also have freshmen, you know, like they could play in that, you know, some of the 25 guys. So I feel like there's an option at 10 I'm not too concerned about, but that being said, we'll wrap it up there. We're looking at around March 20th for the start of spring football, by the way. So that's, we're looking at just over a month away, a month and 10 days, which is good to hear. Any final thoughts, Justin, on football, basketball, anything before we wrap today?
I didn't bring this up to you yet, but I talked to Nick a little bit earlier. I wanted to start kicking something off with him where we're going to go into breaking down the different position groups for recruits.
Yeah.
And doing like top five lists. So you're more than welcome to join us if you'd like, but I figured it's something to just throw in for an extra show during the week. So if you're busy,
I'm gonna let you roll with that. I'll join in occasionally.
I know you've got your show audio only one. I'll get us another one out there where we can go over some of the recruits and kind of break down the board. I haven't dove into 2027 as much as I probably should have. And I'm like, this is probably a good way for me to get a firmer grasp too, because Nick can kind of give me an idea of who we actually, like, we've got a billion offers out. Like, who are we actually kind of like chasing for real?
Yeah, I can't watch film until I know there's some kind of like actual tangible. The offer,
exactly.
The offers are insane. When someone's showing up to like, if someone's coming on campus for, you know, yeah, for like,
that's a little day, different. Like, if cool. they're willing to take a visit, then I know that we're serious. Right. It's serious.
I will watch film when it's a visit. I will not watch film otherwise. Justin and Nick will. So you should definitely check out whatever content they're going to put up. Which will be good. Listen, big game tomorrow. Would love to see us fight hard against Illinois. Don't expect it to happen. What I don't want, I do expect it to happen. I don't want to get run out of the building. I just don't. I think we will, because Illinois is a very, very tough place to play, and I just feel like the crowd's right on top of you, and if we are hot from the beginning, we'll be fine. If we go down 15 points in the first half again, we're absolute toast. Just mail it in. Like, there's
they're
no
going to step on our throats if that happens.
It's going to be – they are way too good for that. But that being said, we'll be back. Check out any content that Justin puts out, if he starts out this week or not. I'll be doing my audio-only show tomorrow. On Wednesday this week, Wednesday. And we'll be back again next week to talk more about spring football, more about basketball, everything coming your way. Thanks for joining us. And as always, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.